Join Sam and Will as they bring the Bible's stories to life through historical evidence and try not to feel out of place in a car garage, all while bringing you Under the Hood.
Welcome to Under the Hood. I'm your host, Will, and I'm here alongside Sam. Sam, what are we talking about today?
We're going to be talking about one of those questions that when I was a teacher for middle school and high school, I would always get this question. It's when you get into Genesis and it walks through the genealogy after Adam, you're coming across the amount of time that these people lived. And it's crazy. It's like 930 years, 950 years, 969 years. So you see these incredible lifespans. And then in Genesis 6, God comes along and says, I'm going to shorten those lifespans. And then you see the lifespans precipitously drop. And so the question is, how do we explain that? As Christians, like, do we have an explanation for that? Do we have any evidence for why that might be? So I'd like to talk about that today.
Don't forget to like and subscribe. We'd love you checked out some other content we have. You can find that at sunlitstudios.com. Yeah, because it is interesting. You go from 900 years to, you know, we live hopefully 80. You know, you see some people in the low hundreds, but it is a wild ride.
Yeah, that's right. And so when God comes in Genesis 6, he says that he's only going to contend with man for 120 years. And that, so life expectancy drops there. What's interesting is the world record in the United States of the longest living person is Sarah Knaus. She lived 119 years. So right up to the precipice, and then she died. You go elsewhere and you'll find people that on record live a little longer than 120 years, but you're not going to find 900 years anymore. So whenever we read that, like the cynic in us, the skeptic in us goes, how do we explain that? That feels weird. Is that like crazy fable talk? How should a Christian think of this? And so there's a couple of things. First off, like this is a supernatural book, right? So if God had people living that long, like, okay, then we believe it. But we come with a presupposition from the beginning that when God created the world and he made Adam and Eve, how long were they supposed to live?
Forever.
They were supposed to live forever. And so when you look at the impact of the fall, there's nothing that's written in a science textbook that talks about a spiritual fall that says, oh, they must go from everlasting life to 120 years. Like, so if there's a sliding scale of the deterioration of humanity, like it's not beyond the pale to say, okay, they've gone from being creatures that were meant to live forever to creatures that now live hundreds of years and with time will be less and less and less. And so there's some views that say, okay, this is just a direct spiritual judgment of God. I'm on board with that. I think that's a good way to look at it. But they'd say that it's that simple and God just snapped his fingers and that's the case. Maybe, and that's totally possible. But I want to get into some things where other people bring this in to where it's like a few other possibilities. Some people say it's dietary changes.
Okay.
Like all of a sudden carnivorous stuff comes in and did that change? What do you think of that?
That one's not strong in my opinion.
Yeah, me neither. I hear that and I'm like, I mean, granted, my diet, like very carnivorous.
We would have found someone by now who figured that diet out.
Yeah, there's people who've tried.
Yeah.
There are people who've tried the biblical diets. There are people who've tried vegetarian, vegan. I mean, everybody dies and nobody's living beyond 120. Another one that I find interesting is if you think of a flood, right? Because when we think of the flood, we think like God just turned on the sprinkler system or something and the world flooded and it was like Noah's boat floated and he got a nice little holiday, you know, oh yay, I'm going on a cruise. No. The flood is violent. It's describing birds need sanctuary even in the ark, which means that whatever's happening in the earth, it is making it virtually uninhabitable in the world. It is not just a flood. This is a raging, dangerous environment. And so if the world was thrown into that sort of upheaval, maybe it changed the environment. Maybe it changed the composition of the air that we breathe. Maybe it changed lots of different things that we can't go and study. We see, you know, deposit layers of different things that make us think that metallics have changed. But that one is a little bit more compelling to me. How about you?
Yeah, it makes more sense that it's not just God that left the sink on. It was this everywhere.
Oh, yeah. That radically changed the dynamics of how Earth functions. I think that's interesting. But again, it's conjecture.
Yeah.
It's us going, maybe. You know, another one that I think is for, I feel like this definitely plays into it, is that the human immune system is impacted, right? So they've done studies where they went back and they looked at Neanderthal man and they studied Neanderthal man. And what they found was Neanderthal man has a significantly superior immune system to modern day humans.
Really?
Which, when you hear Neanderthal man, immediately you go, everything is bad.
Yeah.
Like, it's definitely worse than everything that we are. But the physical immune system, and I don't even know how they study this, but you can Google the article. Imagine that humanity had these great immune systems. All of Noah's neighbors have these incredible immune systems. And then all of a sudden you have a flood that gets rid of all of that genetic diversity. And you lose the positive traits. And what if Noah and his sons had kind of womp-womp genetics? Hmm. What if? Like, what if the immune systems deteriorated because you lost people that were far healthier? That's a chance. And then you have the reality that by nature, the flood, the way that it presents it to us, there has to be a genetic bottleneck, right? So you have Adam, and he has kids, and they have kids, and you see this tree that develops, and you've got branches, you know, going out generations that are tremendously diverse. And then all of a sudden, in a moment, what happens? Whoosh, it comes to a bottleneck. And now the all-male DNA that will ever exist on the earth is going to tie itself back to Noah just the same way initially it tied itself back to Adam. But we know this in modern science. Like, if you have a genetic bottleneck, it's not good for life expectancy. Like, if you have cousins that are sleeping with one another and having children, what's the effects?
Not good.
Not good. You get birth defects, you get immune system problems, you get all kinds of genetic disorders. So what if you had this genetic diversity of a relatively healthy that gets brought together to Noah, and then it's rebuilding from there. So you lose genetic diversity, which 100% in science is going to reduce life expectancy. But what if we take all those factors together? What if immune systems go and genetic diversity plays a role and the change in atmospheric conditions and, you know, to top it off, none of that matters if God says this is the way it's going to be. But it's like when we look at it, we can, you know, hear all this, because when you read 950 years, you're like, whoa, or Methuselah, 969 years. And it makes you want to say, I don't know, this feels weird to say I believe this. But take a step back. If the supernatural things happened and the flood happened, there are things about the way that that happened that we don't know. And if it brought the cataclysmic impact that we're talking about that came from the flood described in Genesis, then we should expect to find some pretty significant changes in the ways that humans lived, survived, and sustained their lives in the aftermath of it.
And another option could be Noah's getting off into an environment that no one's ever seen before. He's never lived in that environment. He's never been a part of that. Mm-hmm. He's not adjusted to what a post-flood world would look like. They don't know what kind of foods out there, plants and animals, and all the effects of this cataclysmic flood would have had on the environment that now he and his sons and his daughter-in-laws have to live in and produce children in.
Yeah. I mean, to that point, like, you think about the explorers that came over to the Americas. What happened to all the people that were native here when they came?
Disease.
When they were introduced, like, life expectancies plummeted because they were not, they didn't have immune systems that could fight these new things. What if the flood unleashed things that prior to that had been contained? Like, so we don't know. There's so many different possibilities. And again, all this is conjecture, but it's like, you know, so somebody who's lived multiple generations in Russia comes out on a morning of 20 degrees and it's like, eh. But in Florida, we come out on a morning of 60 degrees and we're like, oh, I better go in and get my coat. Like, so depending on what surroundings you're coming out to, a fresh new world, right? That could change everything, or at least contribute to many factors that could have brought down life expectancies. And it's not only, this is one of the other interesting notes, is it's not only the Bible that talks about these ancient generations that lived incredible periods of time. So for example, you have something called the Sumerian King List. It's a stone tablet that's very, very old, but it talks about how you had these generations of kings. Now, clearly, I think their math is off because their numbers are even crazier than what we see with Adam and Methuselah and some of the early guys of Genesis. But listen to what it says. It says eight kings reigned there. Listen to this number. 241,200 years. Now, there's people who think that there's a translation error, but even correcting the translation error, they're living longer than the biblical characters still. But listen to what comes next, because this is the important part. You have these kings living incredible life periods. For some reason, the Sumerians believed that ancients lived really long time. The next sentence, the flood swept thereover. After the flood swept thereover, when kingship was lowered from heaven, the kingship was in Kish. And so let me just translate what this is saying. The ancient kings lived insane periods of time, like insane periods of time. Then there was a great flood. Now things are normal. So in the Sumerian mind, people lived a long time. There was a flood. Now they live normal. Does that sound familiar? Like, this is exactly the way that we see the break in the Bible. It's when God is coming to bring the announcement of the flood that he also says he's going to reduce this life expectancy down to 120 years. And so you find other characters from other cultures that lived crazy amounts of time in their mythology. So Pengzu of China, several centuries. Epimenides of Knossos lived for centuries. Dangun of Korea lived 1,908 years. Jamshid of Persia, 7 centuries. Etana of Kish, 635 years. So I'm not saying that those are real people. I think by and large they're myths. But again, in all of these cultures, what are they holding on to that says the ancients lived much longer than we do? If I went and I asked the average person on the streets today, who lived longer, the ancients or us, they'd be like, oh my gosh, life expectancy's gotten so much better. We have all this technology. There's no way they could live long in the past. For the ancients, it was exactly the opposite. Hmm. They believed that the ancients lived longer. Where did they get that from? Josephus, a first century historian, says this: let no one, upon comparing the lives of the ancient with our lives and with the few years that we now live, think that what we have said of them is false, or make the shortness of our lives at present an argument, that neither did they attain so long a duration of life, for the ancients were beloved of God, and because their food was then fitter for the prolongation of life. So you've got a first century Jewish scribe, historian, who's like, yeah, of course, everybody knows they lived much longer in the ancient world because they were beloved by God and their food was better, is what he points to. So you find this all over the place, and I just find that fascinating.
Even logically, it would make sense. If the flood really was what it was, something that was so terrible that wiped out all of humanity, covered the whole earth, only 8 people were left. Yeah, conditions were probably different before the flood than after the flood.
Mm-hmm. And here's one more thing that I'll bring up that I think is fascinating, and I don't know what to do with it. So when we do these kinds of episodes, we're creating more questions than we're answering, maybe. But there's something that was published in the journal Nature Communications. And this is something that geneticists, biologists, anthropologists, we don't know how to explain it. But if you go back and you look at what has happened with genetic diversity, so we can study genetic ancestry, right? Like, you can mail in, you know, your hair, and they can do 23andMe or Ancestry.com, and they can tell you where your ancestors were, where they came from, and they can go back and they can study, this is what you look like going back in time, previous generations. Well, when they do that going back thousands of years, what they find is that female genetic diversity goes about and it's largely unencumbered. It just continues to grow. Genetic diversity continues to grow. For males, what they find is when you go back and you look at this chart that's 7,000 years ago, roughly, all of a sudden, male genetic diversity from every continent that they measure it on suddenly collapses. And they say there's a 16-to-1 ratio of women reproducing versus men reproducing. Right? All of a sudden, male genetic diversity falls off a cliff. And I think, what in the world? And so they look at that and they're like, well, it couldn't have been disease because it would have taken out men and women. It couldn't have been it's not like just a natural catastrophe that's randomized because it would have taken out men and women. Was there some kind of fertility crisis that goes on that widespread men all of a sudden are infertile? Like, they have no reason to believe that. So the most popular argument now is that the kings or the people with power said, I'm going to be the only one that reproduces. No other men are allowed to have sex. Like, how do you think that's going to go?
Not so well.
Like, you know men, right? And so the other thing, when I stopped to think about this appearance of genetic diversity that collapses among men, in the story of the ark, what do you find? You find Noah, who brings a wife who's of genetic differences. Different. 3 daughters that are coming from outside the family line, so that genetic diversity is maintained. But the only male genetics that come through the flood come from who?
Noah.
Noah, that's it. And so you do find 7,000 years ago-ish this collapse in male genetic diversity that nobody knows how to explain. So what if, in this the appearance of genetic diversity that's inside our, you know, first fathers, and it suddenly collapses, like maybe there's some kind of an explanation there that points us to the fact that only one man's genetic diversity comes through this cataclysmic event, while female genetic diversity is not as bottlenecked. Mm. Just an idea. I'm not a geneticist, but I think it's fascinating. And when you consider life expectancies and everything else, that kind of genetic diversity collapse in men would have certainly impacted life expectancies in a profound way.
Yeah, with all this, I'm definitely pretty happy that I'm not living to 900 years.
Yeah, can you imagine living to 950 years with the way that our bodies are, the way the world is? And it's a kindness of God to say, you know what, like we're going to lower that down to 120 years. Because the reality is you don't want to live in a world where you're overwhelmed with fear and anxiety and guilt and shame, and the world is on fire, you know, half the time, and there's war and all these injustices and everything else. Like, this world's a hard place, and the human soul is a hard place to even be with yourself. What Christ does, you know, when we're offered eternal life, I don't want it here. But Christ comes and says, not only am I going to redeem the world and perfect it for you to live in, but I'm going to perfect you, and I'm going to take all of your shame, and I'm going to take all of your guilt and all of your anxiety. I'm going to give you utter peace and all the fruit of the Spirit in infinite measure for you to live that out forever with me. And so it's like we've got a home to go to where we're going to want to live for hundreds and thousands and millions and billions, everlasting life. Because it's going to be a world that's worth living in, with bodies and souls that are worthy of the creation that God is going to make for us for glory. And that'll go on forever.
Don't forget to like and subscribe. We'd love you checked out some other content we have. You can find that at sunlitstudios.com.
Well, we want to thank you for watching. Join us next time as we go under the hood of another story in the Bible.